New York Times reported that the FBI sent an investigator posing as an assistant to meet with a Trump aide, George Papadopoulos, in 2016. Does that qualify as spying?
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on a particular investigative step because that's for the Bureau to do, and I'm not in the government any longer. But the FBI doesn't spy to begin with. The FBI investigates. I don't know whether it's true or not. That's a crazy thing to have to say because any other leader, I would say that's preposterous. It couldn't possibly be true. There's a footnote in the Mueller report that actually makes potentially oblique reference to these tapes where someone in Russia is alerting, I think, with Michael Cohen in October, late October, we stopped the flow of the tapes. I don't know exactly what he means by that, but Mueller seems to connect it in some way to that allegation. Again, Mueller didn't say it wasn't the case. He didn't disprove it, but he also didn't establish that it was the case.
But sending an investigator undercover to meet with somebody who is connected to the campaign, they claimed he was later on just a coffee boy, that is an extreme step, no?
No, it's a reasonable. That was the guy, Papadopoulos, who was the subject of the information we got from the Australians, that he had talked to the Russians.
Did you sign off on the investigator going?
I don't remember talking about that particular step with my team. I knew they were trying to see if they could check it out. That's a totally normal step. See if you can get somebody close to the person and see if they'll confirm what we heard from the Australians.
All right, there more of the sanctimonious super patriot, Jim Comey. You know, I've said it enough times now. Somebody needs to tell this guy, Jim, you do have the right to remain silent. And every time you open your mouth and you're lying again, you're going to get yourself in even more trouble. Now, imagine this. Now, there's three scenarios as it relates to Comey and lying. Because if you look at the Nunes memo, the Grassley-Graham memo, and again, we want to see these FISA applications, which we eventually will. Remember, the bulk of information was Hillary Clinton's dirty Russian dossier that even the New York Times suggests was Russian disinformation from the get-go. Now, if you look at the closed-door testimony of Bruce Orr testified that in August of 2016, he warned everybody that Hillary paid for the dirty dossier, that it wasn't verified, and Christopher Steele had a political agenda, and that he hated Donald Trump. Now we see 10 days out of the signing of the first FISA application. Remember, on top of a FISA application says verified document. We now know that the dossier is unverifiable because the guy that put it together, Christopher Steele, in an interrogatory in Great Britain under oath said, I have no idea if any of this is true, maybe 50-50. I didn't confirm anything. This is just raw intelligence. And he was in a desperate position meeting with the State Department official 10 days before the first FISA application that Comey signed. Now, we have Rod Rosenstein, we played it many times, saying that, well, a FISA, that means a career law enforcement official is signing an affidavit to the best and knowledge and experience that everything that they're in an application is true or there's severe consequences. Remember that? So my point is this. So Comey signs the first FISA application in October of 2016. And he is signing off on the bulk of information that justified the FISA application being the dossier. Remember, McCabe said no dossier, no FISA warrant would have been given. Okay. Then now he goes to Trump Tower a few months later in January of 2017. And he says to then President-elect Trump, well, it's salacious, but it's unverified. So he either lied in October or he lied in January or he lied in all occasions. And now he's saying that the FBI doesn't spy. He signed off on a warrant to spy on Carter Page and spy on the Trump campaign. But he's a super patriot. Remember him and Strzok, and they're all super patriots. They know better than we, the smelly Walmart shoppers, the irredeemable deplorables, those of us that cling to God and guns and Bibles and religion, as Obama said. Anyway, joining us right now, Dan Bongino, former Secret Service agent, Fox News legal analyst in his own right, former NYPD officer, and by the way, author of the upcoming book, Exonerated, out in October. And Chris Hahn of the formerly successful three-affiliate Chris Hahn Show.
It's still there.
Oh, you still have it? How many stations? Last time it was three.
I don't know. I'm on a lot of stations now.
How many?
I think I'm on about eight.
Now, you started a podcast called The Aggressive Progressive.
That's right, man. Aggressive Progressive on Revolver. You got to check
man.
It out.
Now, how many times does my name come up? How many times does my name come up on your Aggressive Progressive podcast?
I save you for the radio because I'm on a lot of stations that you're on. So
yeah, but yeah. So why?
You, it's usually on the radio.
So what you do is you basically take my audience that I hand off to you and piss them off about me, and your ratings go down to nothing. That's a really smart strategy.
I talk about you, and they want to call in to defend you. Some of these guys, and
oh, that's right. I love my audience. So. Dan Bongino, don't we have the best audience in the history of mankind?
No, seriously, Sean, they're super loyal. I mean, I've been at events with you and watched people come up to you and they say the most heartfelt things. So, no, I know you guys are...
Well, because we love our country. Now, let's give Mr. Aggressive Progressive an honesty test, an intellectual honesty test. Dan, are you ready? Should we do this, Dan?
I'm ready.
Let's ask Chris Hahn of the Aggressive Progressive podcast. Now, if Comey has to testify and signs off on the first FISA warrant application to spy on Carter Page and the Trump campaign, he's verifying that everything is true and verified. We now know it's unverifiable. Did he lie then, or did he lie to President-elect Trump when he said it's salacious but unverified? Because those are two contradictory things, aren't they?
They are, but the FISA warrants to follow Carter Page happened long before the Trump campaign. The FBI had been following Carter Page.
No, it happened in October of 2016.
Well, that was the fourth or the third or fourth FISA warrant.
Chris, let me give you facts, because facts are interesting things. You can't dispute facts.
Right.
No, the first FISA application was in October of 2016. Comey's signature was on that one. It was January 2017 when he contradicted what he signed in October of 2016 by saying it's unverified and salacious.
Okay. I disagree. The first FISA warrant
to file
Carter Page was in 2014.
Oh my God. Listen, I hate to say this, but
with Russia on a
you're not.
For years.
You know why you can't be on this show much? Because you just don't keep up. You're not.
Yeah, I know.
You don't read.
He doesn't know. I read
Sean, different papers than
Sean,
you.
Sean.
Oh, you're probably watching CNN.
What he's talking about. He's wasting everybody's time. You
really?
Just played out to him a fact any of your listeners can Google in under 5 seconds. Jim Comey signed the first FISA in October 2016. That's not open for dispute or interpretation, only amongst the idiot class of pundits. Then Jim Comey goes up a couple months later after verifying the information is true and tells Donald Trump in January, Sean, let me check, is January 2017 after October of 2016? Maybe
the last time, yes, according to every calendar except Christmas. Yeah.
They're verifying the FISA warrant information is true. They are not verifying that everything
you're talking about. You don't know what you're talking. Just admit, Sean just destroyed you. You don't know what you're talking about.
I think you really
in
do
January,
need to admit. Listen, I'm going to help you out. I mean, stop digging, because you're digging a ditch for yourself, and you're going to just dig deeper. Why don't you say I got my time frame wrong, and we'll move on.
All right. Well, I'll have to verify my time frame.
Okay. That? No. You. All right. You know what? Then we're just going to keep going, because you don't know what you're talking about. And if you can't admit certain basic fundamental dates and a timeline, well, it's I know you watch, Dan, this is his problem. He watches conspiracy TV, MSNBC, he believes this garbage.
But not on Friday. Friday, I like to kick back.
Now he's blaming Friday for his dumb mistake, Dan.
Sean.
Oh, my gosh.
And you brought up an interesting point in your Fox show last night. The FBI actually stamps these FISA applications with the words verified. In other words, Jim Comey said at one point when he signed off on a warrant that he and his FBI had authenticated information. Just months later, he walked into Donald Trump, said was salacious and unverified. It's not open for dispute. I just don't understand why liberals just don't come clean with this and just take the loss spying is a synonym for surveillance in every dictionary on the planet, every thesaurus on the planet. It's obvious what happened. They got a secret spying warrant. They employed multiple spies, Stefan Halper, Azra Turk. They issued national security letters. Just take the loss, Chris. Stop humiliating
the liberals. Dan, you're already one of Sean's favorite guys. You don't got to tell him you watched the show last night. Okay.
Well, hang on. He was on the show last night.
On your other screen, you had a hockey game on, so you're watching one eye.
Excuse me. After you get your brains beaten in and you just sound dumb, do you just go after the guest personally? Why don't you be nice to Dan? Was an NYPD officer. He was a Secret Service officer. He's a close friend of mine. Dan knows more about this than you. Maybe you should be quiet. And just listen to Dan.
Dan and I and Sean, you might not believe this, but I love you too, brother.
I have defended you to people who think you're a real jerk. I'm serious. And you know, you do this stuff, and it's really like it gets under my skin. You just are unfamiliar with the facts. I'm sorry. I don't hold it personally against you.
All right, I'll tell you what we're gonna do because Linda loves Chris Hahn. All right, Linda has a deep biting like. All right, Linda, who's correct with the timeline? Dan and myself or Mr. Aggressive Progressive Podcast?
You guys are correct, but Chris just very kindly said, I'm going to just check my
information. Let me check my facts. Okay, well, how do you not know this?
Like, you know, he's got children.
Covering it for 2 years.
He just started a new podcast. He's very busy. His kids are teenagers. He's got stuff to do. You know, maybe he just missed that.
It's Friday afternoon. I got to call
Friday. I don't know. I would have had the dates on Monday.
Sure. For my friend Sean with my buddy Dan Bongino. Happy to
Exactly. Exactly.
You're going to make me check facts.
So, you know what? We were unfair because we asked him on Friday, Dan. We should have asked him on Monday.
I don't know when you can ask him. Monday?
I don't know. What day is your best day that you might remember something called a fact?
I remember facts all the time when I'm prepared to remember the fact.
When I'm prepared to remember the facts.
I do know this about Carter Page. There were multiple FISA warrants on Carter Page to follow him.
Okay, who
was engaged with the Russians on a very high level.
Okay,
and the
stop.
Should be concerned.
Carter
about.
Page, by the way, you know what? I'm not buying this because Carter Page, and I've interviewed. Have you ever interviewed him? Have you ever met him? Have you ever talked to him?
He's a very sweet guy.
I didn't ask you. Did you ever meet him? Ever interview? Ever talk to him?
I have. Interviewed him, but I have talked to him.
How long?
I've talked to him a couple of times, and I find him very sweet.
Sweet. Okay.
Yes.
Whatever. Whatever description you want to use. Carter Page, when he would go abroad as part of his job, Dan Bongino, correct me if I'm wrong, he would come back and he would debrief every experience he had with our intelligence officials because he loves his country.
Yes. You know what, Chris, is insulting a Naval Academy grad. Carter Page, by the way, Sean, who's never been charged with anything.
Never.
And, Sean, he was a cooperating witness. Chris is not a law enforcement guy. He doesn't know what that means. I know you do. Meaning he helped the United States government in the Buryakov case where we locked up Russian spies. I don't expect Chris to understand any of this. It's beyond his...
That's why Dan is on. I forgot all about that. But Dan's a rock star.
I was the chief deputy Nassau County executive. The police department reported to me. I know a thing or two about law enforcement, too. Okay? Just because.
And why? How many times have you been locked up?
There might not be reasonable suspicion to pursue.
Wait a minute. Whoa. Were you locked up?
About Navy grads. What about all these FBI agents who are patriots?
Chris, why are you all worked up? Why don't you just say I kind of screwed this up? And by the way, were you ever arrested?
I have never been arrested.
You should be.
For what?
All right. I don't know. We'll figure out. Well, we'll say you colluded with the Russians. That's what all your friends say every day. We'll just make it up like they do and build a big bizarre conspiracy theory full of lies for 2 years and just a hoax perpetrated on the American people. All right, hang in there. Dan Bongino, Chris Hahn. By the way, Chris has a podcast. It's called The Aggressive Progressive. And I think he's going to have me and Dan on as a guest. All right, final minute with Chris Hahn and with Dan Bongino. Do you want to apologize to Dan, Chris?
Apologize? I love Dan. Dan knows that.
Have you ever been on Dan's show?
I keep telling Dan we got to do some speeches together. We got to tour the country, make some money. But, you know, he wants to do his YouTube show.
Dan? Yeah,
well, Chris, unlike you, I have an audience. My YouTube show gets hundreds of thousands of people. I don't know what you're getting progressive.
We would make more money together. I think people like us together. We've got very similar Italian-American energy.
I'd have to hire security. People are so...
Dan, what he's trying to do is he's trying to ride your coattails to success. That's what he's doing.
And I would give the guy an opportunity, but he's got to know something. I'm not going to have him in front of an audience. He doesn't even know that Comey signed a fight or not over.
I mean, Chris, you got to up your knowledge. And, you know, if you want to get in the game, you got to actually read.
Guys, I didn't say Comey didn't sign the warrant. I'm saying it wasn't the first warrant because you're missing
okay.
the other warrant.
No, you didn't even know when the first warrant is. You don't even know the timeline of any of it.
It predates the Trump candidacy, the first warrant.
Oh, my. Dan Bongino, thank you. Chris, there's no hope. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, at the bottom of the half hour, we got some real economic numbers, and we'll have more on Comey and his lies from last night at the top of the next hour, News Roundup Hour, straight ahead.
The big scam of the whole address was that there's a crisis. There's not a crisis.
Folks, the president has manufactured one heck of a political crisis for himself.
Donald Trump is manufacturing a national security crisis.
You will hear them say is that this is a manufactured crisis. It's not a national security crisis.
This is a manufactured crisis. No crisis exists, and anyone making the argument is most likely guilty of fear-mongering and willfully misleading the American people.
Locals will tell him on the border, even conservatives, is that there isn't a national security crisis.
The notion that we have a crisis there, a security crisis, is absolute nonsense.
So this is a manufactured crisis and a crisis that manufactured by the Trump administration.
This artificial crisis of the president isn't going to justify his appropriating money for a wall that Congress is unwilling to give.
Is there a crisis at the border? The president said there's a humanitarian crisis at the border. Is there?
Absolutely not. We have a challenge. All our humanitarian issues are challenges for us.
Oh, really? No crisis at the border? Glad you're with us. 25 now till the top of the hour. 800-941-SEAN is our number. Well, we got another article out today. Record number of agents apparently at the border. And as a result, illegal immigration at 9 times the rate of 2017. 9 times. Illegal immigration at the U.S.-Mexico border last month was 9 times the level of the same month 2 years ago and is projected to outpace every year when Obama oversaw immigration. Now, why is this happening? In part because... Well, in part, the people in Central America, in El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Honduras, they actually see the walls going up. They see their time is now limited in terms of free and open access to America's borders. And they have a president that is now committed and fighting every day to get the border wall fixed and built as we watch every day. One of the things that has always... never kind of been stated. I know Joe Biden is staking out his left-leaning base, and he said, of course we're going to have to provide health care for illegal immigrants. And I'm like, why? When people go through the process, and it takes a long time, and they respect our laws, our Constitution, our borders, our sovereignty, why don't we reward people for respecting our laws first? If you want to be part of our country, the first thing you got to do is respect the law. Anyway, but what happens when you have so much cheap labor in the United States? Who gets impacted? Now, the Biden-Obama economy, I've spelled it out many times. 13 million more Americans in 8 years on food stamps. 8 million more in poverty, the worst recovery since the 40s. Lowest labor participation rate since the 70s. Lowest home ownership rate in 51 years. Fast forward, Donald Trump, record low unemployment for Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, African Americans, women in the workplace, historic lows, youth unemployment. And, you watch it. So I was reading CNS News. A good friend of this program wrote a great column, Terry Jeffrey. Want to make money? Work for the government. And he raises this question, these questions in the beginning of his article. Which class of full-time, year-round American workers has the highest median earnings? Is it the class that works for the private sector employers? Is it the class that works for the government? or is it the entrepreneurial class who are self-employed? And we invite Terry back to the program to answer that question and much more. He is the editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
And it also, there's a direct correlation, because I think people want open borders basically for two reasons. You have people that want it because they think there will be that the majority of people, if they come in from other countries, that they might want government assistance to get their life going. So they want to empower a new voting base. The other group of people want cheap labor. They don't want to pay people for the jobs that they have available. And that either one to me is troublesome. And to me, you know, we've got to be able to vet those people that come into this country. And we got to think about the cost to the American taxpayer. I think it's fair to mandate that if you want to come here and you get one of the coveted slots, that you ought to be able to pay for, show that you have the means to take care of yourself. But go ahead. What did you find?
Well, here's the horrible fact, Sean. The Census Bureau publishes numbers for the median income of Americans by the class of workers they belong to. And they have the private sector, people who are working for private industry, the government sector, people who are working federal, state, or local government, and then self-employed entrepreneurs who are trying to start their own business or working for themselves. And when you look at the latest numbers the Census Bureau has put out, which are for calendar year 2017, the highest median income for among those three classes of workers are for people who work for the government, and the lowest is for private wage and salary workers. But in those categories, they break them up into each one of those three categories is broken up into two categories. For people who are self-employed or who are in private industry, they divide it between agricultural industries and non-agricultural industries. And for people who are in government, they divide it between people who work for the federal government or people who work for state and local government. And when you look at it that way, the highest paid people in America work for the federal government. Their median income is $66,028. The lowest paid workers in America are people who work in private industry and agricultural jobs. Their median income is $35,490. And as you're pointing out at the beginning of this segment, there's a lot of illegal aliens coming into the United States looking for jobs. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture has studied that. And they say, the federal government says, that about 50% of the workers in crop farm work in the United States of America are here illegally, which means they're competing with the other 50% who are either native-born Americans, green card holders, or naturalized citizens. So those workers in the agricultural industry who are making the lowest wages in the United States of America but are here legally or are U.S. citizens are forced to compete with the illegal alien labor that the highest paid class in America, those who work for the federal government, allow to come across our borders and work here illegally.
The thing is, if you look at the data now, and Democrats just lie, I mean, they're not telling the truth, but the people now that we have seen benefit the most from ending burdensome regulation on business and lowering the tax base, and for the record, I don't get the state income tax reduction that I once had, which, by the way, was a benefit that incentivized states to raise income taxes that low tax states didn't have. So, frankly, states like New York, California, with high state income taxes, their residents have been getting the financial benefit on the backs of those states that have no state income tax. And I don't think that's right. It's better that I'm paying more as a result of the Trump tax cuts. And I think I'm way overtaxed. But putting that aside, you know, you literally have the demographic groups that have done the best under Donald Trump's policies are the very groups that we always talk about. And that is African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, women in the workforce. Why is that?
Well, because he's creating jobs. He's helping create jobs in the working and middle class. He's not creating jobs for the elite. I mean, we saw record record low unemployment rate among Hispanic Americans in the last month. That is a great thing. It's something the liberal media doesn't want to talk about. But there's a pattern here. When you look at another thing the Census Bureau puts out is statistics on every year and what are the wealthiest counties in the United States of America. Well, in the latest data, guess what the five wealthiest counties are in the United States of America? Loudoun County, Virginia, Fairfax County, Virginia, Howard County, Maryland, Falls Church City, Virginia, which is counted because it's an independent city as a county, and Arlington County, Virginia. And what do those five counties have in common? They're all suburbs of Washington, D.C., populated by federal government workers and former federal government workers who have gone to work for federal contractors. That is the wealthiest part of America, the area around our nation's capital. And the people who are working there, again, they're not working, they're not backing President Trump to secure the border so that legal workers and U.S. citizens are in the agricultural industry can see their wages go up because they don't have to compete with the illegal aliens who are driving their wages down. We have a government that in an economic elite and a government elite that are married to one another, Sean. And another thing, as you pointed out, part of the jobs that illegal aliens are going into are in the agricultural industry, and the Democrats have a political interest in allowing illegals to come across the border. But major corporations in this country have an interest in allowing illegal aliens to come in for economic reasons because they can pay them a lower wage than they would to an American citizen or someone who's legally here with a green card.
But look what's happening too, though. These high-tax states are losing populations by the tens of thousands every year. New York, New Jersey, California, Illinois. All right, quick break. We'll come back. Terry Jeffrey with us, editor-in-chief of CNSnews.com. On the other side, news roundup, information overload, and your calls next hour. All right, as we continue, Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief, CNSnews.com. There's a story out today about the city of Oakland. They're in such dire financial straits, they're planning to use $2.9 million from the state gas tax, their revenues, just to keep the city's lights on. In the state of New York, Andrew Cuomo, he's now facing, a $3 billion shortfall. And why? Because we tax the rich, we tax the rich, we tax the rich, and then the rich start leaving. He even said it himself.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Well, you know, I'm a native San Franciscan. I know the Bay Area very well. And I love the Bay Area. I love Northern California.
You should, by the way, do what we did. We went and sent our cameras right to Nancy Pelosi's house, within walking distance to both her house and her office. No, I'm not kidding. And you know what the biggest problem? Homelessness at such a degree that people are literally feces all over the streets, syringes everywhere. And I'm just wondering, she's a multi-millionaire. Why doesn't she go around her community that's gated? And why doesn't she raise money so that homeless people have a place to get a warm meal every day and a shower and maybe a cot and maybe some counseling if they're addicted to drugs? I guess
no, that would it's very sad, Sean. I agree with you. It's very sad. I mean, there's been a huge and sad cultural transformation in San Francisco and the Bay Area in recent decades. And that is part of it, that the city of San Francisco has been filling up with homeless people. They've made some of the streets, particularly in the Tenderloin area, outrageously filthy. And at the same time, you have the wealthiest people in America living there. And in fact, another interesting data point is the Center for Responsive Politics has looked at who are the wealthiest members of Congress. And seven of the 10 wealthiest members of Congress are Democrats, but two of them come from the city of San Francisco, Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein. And they're among the wealthiest people in America. They're among the wealthiest people in Congress. And yet you see the greatest financial and cultural dichotomy in their own hometown, which is a beautiful place. And I wish it would be restored to what it was 50 years ago.
People didn't believe us, so we sent our cameras back and our investigative reporter, Lawrence Jones, back twice. And each time it was the same thing. Within walking distance to Pelosi's house in her rich gated neighborhood and her own office, I mean, it is literally, you know, the streets are being used as a sewer, and syringes are everywhere. And seriously, I don't think it's that much. you know, if she walked around the community, you have a lot of Silicon Valley people there that are extraordinarily wealthy like she is and say, well, I'm going to put $1 million in, you put $1 million in, and we can, you know, build a place where, you know, people can get, you know, a cot, a place to sleep, go to the bathroom, take a shower, maybe get counseling, and then maybe get some, you know, warm meal once in a while, you know, something. Why are always liberals just generous with our money? Why don't they ever do something themselves, considering they lecture everybody else if they make money?
It's a good point, and I think there's another question there, which is probably a good number of those folks who are living on the street in San Francisco and other places have mental problems, and they need treatment. And I think there's a debate about how they ought to be treated. I think there is a role, particularly for state and local government, in trying to take care of people who are mentally ill. They shouldn't be out on the streets. They should be put in some kind of shelter. They should get medical care. Our society should take care of them. Ideally, it would be in private charity, but the second best choice is state and local government. And I think that really is a question for California, considering...
Well, they got a 13.5% state income tax. What are they doing with that money?
Well, exactly. I mean, exactly. And by the way, California has a very, very high percentage of foreign-born population, but particularly illegal alien foreign-born population. And I think that's...
Well, now everyone's getting mad that they're not going to be counted in the census if they're not American citizens. Apparently, that's a big deal that the courts have to decide. All right, Terry, we got to let you go. Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief, CNSnews.com. We appreciate you being with us. When we come back, we get back to the deep state issue and crazy Jim Comey is losing it, and much, much more. All right, glad you're with us. Hour two, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. If you want to be a part of this extravaganza, big hour coming up. John Solomon at the bottom of this half hour. At the top of the next hour, Bill O'Reilly checks in on all of these things. In the meantime... we now have a situation where we do believe that, in fact, if Joe DiGenova, who's always been a great source and knows a lot, that, in fact, the brand new prosecutor, John Durham, has already been using a grand jury to grill witnesses, and that has been impaneled in Connecticut, and his effort is operating alongside FISA abuse investigative, the inspector general, that would be Michael Horowitz, his look into FISA. And DiGenova saying Horowitz has already determined that three FISA extensions against, well, Carter Page and hence the Trump campaign were illegally obtained and on the brink of finding the first FISA warrant was completely illegal. We also have now discovered, which I think is blockbuster, that there have been two separate occasions where we now know the FBI was warned directly about the dossier, that Bruce Ohr, in closed-door testimony, said that he told everybody in the upper echelon of the Department of Justice and the FBI that, in fact, Steele hated Trump, had a political agenda, Hillary paid for it, and that it was not verified. Now, remember, James Comey signed the first FISA application, but 10 days prior to that, we found out that, Christopher Steele met with this woman that works at the State Department, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, Kathleen Kavalek. And by the way, she went and warned the FBI also about the dossier and about Christopher Steele having a deadline and that being Election Day. And Steele was trying to disseminate this information any way he possibly could. And that it was not verified. And then we found out, too, that multiple sources confirming to John Solomon that the State Department email that was sent to the FBI, that was Special Agent Stephen Laylock. He's the FBI's section chief for Eurasia Counterintelligence, now one of the top executives as the assistant director of intelligence under Christopher Wray. And the email from Laylock to the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State arrived 8 days before the FBI filed and signed as true the first FISA application. It says on the top of a FISA application, you know, verified. Now we also know that the dossier is unverifiable because Christopher Steele in an interrogatory in Great Britain couldn't stand by his own dossier saying, I have no idea if any of it's true. They never told the FISA court in the application directly that Hillary Clinton bought and paid for this information. It was unverifiable, but they did it anyway. Because not only did they spy on Carter Page, it gave them a direct link into all things Trump world, including the Trump campaign, then the Trump transition team, and then the Trump presidency. It's pretty unbelievable. Anyway, joining us now is former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. By the way, he has written a brand new novel. How's that going, by the way?
Very, very well.
And the name of the book is called Collusion.
Collusion opened at number five, and it's about real collusion between the Russians and Antifa in an effort to poison the U.S. Senate. So it's a very exciting novel. We're very excited about how well it's doing. But I just want to comment on everything you just walked through. At some point, as a historian, people are going to start realizing that this could be one of the greatest backfires in history, that everything the left did to go after Trump and failed now sets the stage for discovering just how corrupt and just how sick the system was. And as these things just inexorably keep working, we're going to learn stuff that's going to make most Americans realize this was a really serious effort to undermine the United States by a group of people who didn't care how corrupt they were or how much they were breaking the law.
You know, it's really sad because when you think, Mr. Speaker, the 99% in the media, the mob, as we call them, and it's now you are the first to identify. They wake up every morning with, how can I hate Trump even more today? And this rage that is now a psychosis, almost a mass psychosis. But it's 99.9% of the media. They've been lying. They've been spinning conspiracy theories, a hoax on the American people for well over 2 years. But so, too, has everybody else involved in this. And that is the entire Democratic Party establishment has been doing this. And it really makes me nervous for my country that it really happened, that Hillary, we know she had top secret classified information on the private server in a bathroom closet. We know that it was likely hacked into by foreign governments. We know that the exoneration was written before the investigation. We have Strzok and Page both saying that it was rigged, that the fix was in, and Loretta Lynch was calling all the shots. Not only was she meeting Bill Clinton on a tarmac talking about grandchildren just before the decision for 45 minutes and telling Comey it's a matter, not an investigation. But then it gets worse than that. Then we have, of all things, considering we've talked so much about Russia, a phony Russian, what the New York Times is now suggesting is a disinformation document paid for by Hillary, used in four FISA warrant applications, never telling the FISA court judges that Hillary paid for it, that it was unverified. They never told the FISA court judges any of the details. We know Andrew McCabe said no dirty Russian dossier paid for by Hillary. There wouldn't have been a FISA warrant. And then they used it to bludgeon a president and try and unseat a duly elected president because they thought the smelly Walmart voters should have gone 100 million to zero with Hillary over Trump, the same Hillary that they saved from being indicted. That all happened, Mr. Speaker, in the United States of America. You're a historian. I'm not. Is there anything on this scale or magnitude you can think of?
No, there isn't. And I just read an amazing new book by Katz, who's the editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post, called Shadow Strike, which is about the Israelis taking out the North Korean-built nuclear reactor in Syria. And it's fascinating from the standpoint of Hillary Clinton for this reason. One of the key breakthroughs was that Mossad, the Israeli intelligence agency, went into a hotel room, got the laptop of the Syrian head of the Atomic Energy Commission in Syria, and were able to download his entire laptop and discovered that he had put pictures in his laptop of this nuclear facility, including a picture of a North Korean scientist at the facility. And so when people say, well, what does it really matter? Well, this guy broke every single classification rule that they had, exposed himself, created the situation where the Israelis had the knowledge to go to the Americans and say, look at the pictures. This is real. And then they took out the entire facility, which, by the way, ISIS would have occupied 7 years later if the Israelis hadn't done it. So you think about Hillary Clinton's server, you think about how often she violated the most basic rules of secrecy in the U.S. government. You think about people who've gone to jail for 1% of what she did. And it begins to give you a sense of how sick it was. I mean, I see it as sort of a triangle. You have the news media that is sick because they hate Trump. You have an elite bureaucracy, which is sick because it hates Trump and it thinks it can get away with anything. And you have the kings of the Democratic Party who are sick. And you see that triangle working. And what's happening to it now, of course, and the great danger they faced when Trump won is, with people as courageous as Attorney General Barr, we're starting to learn what really happened. And I guarantee you it is all going to get worse.
Mr. Speaker, we know that there are five specific buckets. John Solomon and I talk about them often on this program. And, you know, we know that eventually we're going to get the FISA applications that Devin Nunes and the House Intel Committee and Grassley and Graham say the bulk of the applications were the dirty Russian dossier. Even the New York Times suggesting it probably was Russian disinformation in the end. Irony is upon all ironies, right? We're going to get the 302 communications between the likes of Bruce Ohr and Christopher Steele. We're going to get the Gang of Eight material where apparently the FBI privately acknowledged they messed up royally. We're going to get a series of emails that Trey Gowdy and Lindsey Graham and others have been shouting about that literally will show that the FBI, in a series of emails, knew exactly what was going on and did it anyway. And apparently, bucket five is exculpatory evidence was held back and exculpatory statements were held back and they moved forward anyway. And again, to first stop Trump, first rig a general election, why not? It worked against Bernie in the primary. Then to undermine and unseat a duly elected president. It is exactly what we've been saying for 2 years it is. Now with the evidence all forthcoming.
No, that's right. And of course, what causes a real crisis in this is, let's say you're a reporter and for two solid years you've been saying things that are false. Well, now, can you really admit that your entire professional life for the last 2 years has been a lie? Or do you have to find a new lie to cover up the old lies to keep moving forward? And that's why the system is just going to, you know, we're going to go into a real period of extraordinary catharsis where people are going to be confronted with making decisions that will be historic and that will shape America's understanding of itself for the next 30 or 40 or 50 years.
You know, I think if we don't get it right, Mr. Speaker, I mean, this is the stuff of a banana republic. This is how civilizations now cave when you have a few at the top abusing power. You know, and we're not even touching the what we know also happened, a 350% increase in surveillance and unmasking in 2016 alone. Why would the UN ambassador, Samantha Powers, have 300 separate unmasking requests? What is that all about? That would mean the powerful tools of intelligence were turned on the American people. That's a scary scenario because we have the premier law enforcement agency in the world known as the FBI, and that is the 99%. We have the premier intelligence agencies in the world too. That's the 99%, but the 1% with all that power literally tried to basically create a coup in this country.
Right. And let me just slow you down on the example you used. So when is the Senate, which is still controlled by the Republicans, when is the Senate going to call in Samantha Powers and ask her to explain what she was doing? I mean, to the best of my knowledge, we have no under oath on the record explanation of why she would have made these extraordinary requests.
It doesn't make sense. You're right. All right. Stay right there. Former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, Fox News contributor. His new book, Collusion, is out. A novel ripped from today's headlines. We have John Solomon with breaking news coming up. And Bill O'Reilly and the acting secretary of the Department of Homeland Security will get a border update today. Busy news day. Listen, people put things they want to give away on the curb all the time, right? You throw it away. People sometimes go by and they pick it up and they take it to their house. But would you put your financial documents, say your private passwords, your social security number, would you put it out on the curb for anybody to pick up? Well, when you use public Wi-Fi, even password protected Wi-Fi, that's pretty much what you're doing. You're giving it away, making your private information that you send and receive easily accessible to these cyber criminals. It's like picking up a box on the curb. That's why in this day and age, you need Norton Secure VPN. It's a virtual private network that will encrypt all of your connections, even on public Wi-Fi, so the information that you send and receive is safe from cyber criminals who want to steal your private information or companies that want to track your buying habits. It's simple to use. You install it, log in once, run seamlessly in the background. Now, it's only $3.33 a month. That's it. Just go to Norton.com/VPN to encrypt all of your devices. That's Norton.com/VPN, and it's only $3.33 a month for privacy. I think it's worth it. A great deal. We'll continue.
Draining the swamp, one corrupt politician at a time. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
And as we continue, former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich with us. His brand new book is out. It's called Collusion, ripped right out of the headlines. And it's up on Hannity.com, Amazon.com, bookstores everywhere. As I see all of these developments, what I see are a lot of people that are likely now facing a criminal indictment. What do you see?
Oh, I think if the system does its job, I firmly believe this goes back to the Clintons. I think it goes up to the Attorney General. It may well go as far as the president and the vice president. I mean, Biden running for president is going to have to answer a heck of a lot of questions about what he knew and when he knew it and whether he is being cut out and by whom. And I just think this thing is very likely to lead sometime late this year to an amazing range of indictments that will really be serious and criminal. And very, very different than what we saw with Mueller. I think this is not going to be about perjury or were you confused or whatever. This is going to be about people who did things knowingly that were illegal.
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious that there was a premeditated, because everybody was warned, conspiracy to commit fraud on a FISA court to spy on an opposition party candidate. It seems like a few powerful people purposely exonerated the favored presidential candidate of a crime that everyone else would be indicted for. And then, of course, the obstruction with the bleach bit, the hammers, and the subpoenaed emails destroyed.
Well, and you have to raise the question also, if in fact it's true, as everybody seems to now think, that it was the Clinton campaign that initially paid Steele. I mean, what does it mean if an American presidential campaign hires a secret agent from Great Britain outside the U.S. to write a document designed to lie about an American presidential candidate? I mean, it's ironic, and this is what I tried to say earlier on. We're now seeing the mirror image of what they attacked Trump for, except now it turns out to be real. I mean, just think about how weird this is.
You're right. I want to remind people, by the way, are you doing any more book signings real quick?
No, actually, I'm in California at Barnes & Noble, I think, on Saturday night.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We appreciate it. All right. John Solomon, breaking news. Bill O'Reilly coming up.
continuing to build the foundation for conservative victory.
Victory.
Now, back to the Sean Hannity Show.
Is that you guys didn't put a big red red pen warning, you know, warning FISA court, this guy was under contract to Fusion GPS, which was under contract to Perkins Coie, which was campaign counsel to Hillary Clinton, right? And instead, it is in a pretty extensive footnote, you didn't identify the U.S. entities. So my question is, why didn't you identify it in A, explicitly who the U.S. entities were, the U.S. political campaign, the other U.S. entities, and number two, why was it in a footnote rather than written in big red magic marker in block letters across every page of the thing?
The information set forth in that gigantic footnote was consistent with the type of information and the way we would phrase things to basically effectively be the red light on top of the a document, like, hey, court, pay attention to this. There are issues here. We think you need to know about these things. My view was, and I'm well aware of this, the department attorneys have the highest duty of candor to the FISA court that exists in law. It's an ex parte proceeding, and we have the obligation to tell the court every material fact with respect to the application. And so I wanted to make sure that that was done. I thought that this was sufficient to put the court on notice, and I don't know what else to say.
All right, that testimony you heard was at the Brookings Institute. This guy, Benjamin Witz, who's well-connected and I think a big supporter of the deep state from what I've read of the stuff he puts on Twitter. Anyway, trying to explain with why it is that he didn't highlight enough as it relates to the FISA court, the U.S. entities involved with the Steele dossier, such as Fusion GPS and Perkins Coie and Hillary Clinton. A lot of questions we don't get answers to. John Solomon joins us now. You have all these sources confirming that the State Department email was, in fact, Special Agent Stephen Laycock is his name. Then the FBI's section chief, I think for Eurasia and counterintelligence, and now one of the Bureau's top executives as the assistant director for intelligence under the FBI Director Wray. What's going on?
Yeah, it's an important new name that's emerged in the last 24 hours. So multiple sources confirm to me that Special Agent Laycock, now the Director of Intelligence, so an assistant director very high up in the top echelon of the FBI, back in 2016 was the agent who first received the notification from the State Department that Steele had gone rogue, that Steele had gone to the State Department outside of his FBI chain of command and pitched a briefing on everything he was finding on Donald Trump. And it's important to note the date, October 11th. It's less than a month before the election, and it's 10 days before the FBI goes and gets the first FISA warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. So 10 days before the FISA, the FBI has a notification that Steele is sitting over at the State Department. Every senior executive, former FBI executive I found, I ran this by in the last day, said, if you got this notification, you don't even know what he told the State Department. If you just find out Steele suddenly at the State Department talking about Russia and Trump, what would you do? And they all say, we would have tapped the brakes. We would have stopped our dealing with him. We would have done a reevaluation of him. We would have gone to the State Department and said, what specifically was he telling you and why was he there? And if they had done that, here's what the FBI would have found. Steele was admitting he had an election day deadline to get his information out. Steele admitted he worked for an organization recently hacked, a la the Democratic National Committee. Steele acknowledged he was talking to the Washington Post and New York Times, a la he was leaking. And fourth, some of the information he told the State Department about his narrative of Donald Trump-Russia collusion, now disproven, was demonstrably false. My favorite anecdote in the notes from the State Department were, he told the State Department, and I'm sure he told the Justice Department at some point, this whole hacking enterprise that the Russians had built their emigres who were being doing the work were being funded out of the Russian consulate in Miami. And the State Department noticed right away, that can't be true. There is no Russian consulate in Miami. So a really major fact point just stood out. If in 45 minutes the State Department could come to this assessment of the politics, the deadline, the motive, and the erroneous information, you have to wonder why the FBI, with all of its counterintelligence powers, could not do the same.
We're now watching with the appointment that has been made and now new information about Durham, the prosecutor in this case. Everybody is freaked out. We see Joe DeGeneva, a good friend of the program, and ours is he's suggesting John Durham is already using a grand jury to grill Russia hoax witnesses. We have new documents showing that Mueller, in fact, put Weissman, of all people, in charge of hiring all of Mueller's investigators, which would explain a lot because he was at Hillary's victory party. And that's the same Andrew Weissman who, in Sidney Powell's book, she describes him withholding exculpatory evidence. He's the one that lost tens of thousands of jobs at Enron Accounting. He's the one that lost 9-0 in the Supreme Court. He's the one that put four Merrill executives in jail for a year. That was overturned by the Fifth Circuit. Now we find out that he was the most powerful person in the whole Mueller investigation, which adds so much more credibility and weight to the fact that they still found nothing.
Yeah, listen, every day we're getting visibility into issues that we were denied visibility for a long time. I think in light of all we've learned in the last couple of days, if you can tell your audience, members of Congress who spent 2.5 years investigating Russia and FISA abuses were never given these documents at the State Department. They weren't told of the FBI recipient, Stephen Laycock. So there's a roadmap now for Congress and the Inspector General at the Justice Department to interview new witnesses, get new fact information. Why was it so easy for the State Department to figure out that Steele was lying and leaking and political, and the FBI have a hard time trying to describe that to the court or not providing it to the court in advance of the FISA warrant? That's a very important new lead where people can go. But there's something the president can do right now. There's a bucket of documents. I think we've called it Bucket 4, you and I and Devin Nunes and others. It's a series of emails that I'm told show that the FBI was debating and had concerns about Steele's credibility before the FISA. Those should become public now. We should no longer have to hide behind all of this classification and secrecy. The investigation is over. The American people should find out what were those concerns and did the FBI adequately disclose them to the court. I think we're going to find out that they did not, and that many important facts were kept from the court, including exculpatory information against the targets of their FISA warrant. There's something the president can do, his administration can do, the attorney general could do right now that would give us the sort of visibility to advance this investigation in the public's knowledge, and it's a good time for that to happen.
Well, it would be. Now, let's go to the other buckets as well, because one would be the FISA applications themselves.
That's right.
A second would be the 302s, Bruce Orr, Christopher Steele. Those would be particularly important. Bucket number three is the Gang of Eight material. Wouldn't that include some of Bucket four, or is that separate and apart where the FBI is acknowledging mistakes that they made throughout this whole process?
Yeah, so the Gang of Eight materials are a posthumous, if I could use that word, but post FISA review of what was right and wrong. The email chain is a contemporaneous discussion ongoing between officials. It may have reached as high as James Comey, people tell me, about the credibility and concerns, and it may raise the possibility that DOJ was concerned about using Steele. So it's a contemporaneous document. It's not part of that bucket. The fifth bucket is also extremely important. There is a document or series of documents, I believe they're called exculpatory statements, that list all of the intercepts and information that the FBI possessed from things like informants and others, maybe people wearing wires at various times, in which people like Papadopoulos and Carter Page, who are the focus of this alleged collusion scandal, now cleared, of course, and things they were saying to undercovers and being intercepted without their knowledge, that really weighed towards the evidence of innocence, that the idea the FBI went into this investigation, the predicate of collusion was in fact false. Knowing how much the FBI had of that, plus the concerns about Steele's credibility would really give us a sense of how bad the FBI's conduct was before the court and whether the things that were talked at that panel that you started the segment with were really true. Is that a defensible place to be? A footnote is a good place to tell the court that the total production of this allegation was from the rival campaign of Donald Trump. It was never that clear, and I doubt the courts ever saw it that clearly. So I think we have a great opportunity with these buckets to get this information out, not harm.
Well, there's actually five buckets, though, because we have the FISA, we have the 302s, we have the Gang of Eight.
Right.
You just explained the fourth bucket, the series of emails FBI had going back and forth that lays out a lot of this.
Bucket five are those exculpatory statements, a summary of all the things that was exculpatory that the FBI had that they didn't weigh into the equation of continuing the investigation. So that's the fifth bucket.
I mean, that's pretty damning. And a lot of that is even emerging in sort of obscure ways, like with Strzok and Page and their closed-door testimonies suggesting and saying that Loretta Lynch was making all the decisions. And, yeah, the investigation into Hillary was rigged.
Yeah, you have to look at the Hillary investigation and the Trump investigation as forever being linked. The motives, the people, the tensions, the unusual behavior of the FBI are similar in both places. And I think that's an important part we have to keep in mind as we review this evidence. Both cases have to be looked through the lens that both the FBI acted very oddly and differently in both cases. And I think that's an important part of the equation.
All right, so let's go to the issue of we sort of have all these deep state people now beginning to turn on each other. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, part of this is actually pretty entertaining, but I think that this is also, in the end, it's going to be fairly revealing. Because, you know, you've got Lisa Page and Strzok, they're blaming Loretta Lynch for rigging their investigation. You got Bruce Orr blaming the DOJ and the FBI for ignoring his warning on Christopher Steele in August of 2016. You got Comey is trashing Strzok and Page on national TV. Rosenstein and James Comey are attacking each other's character. McCabe is attacking anyone with a pulse. And then even on top of that, now we've got Comey and Brennan turning on each other over, you know, who pushed the Steele dossier.
Yeah, I think that's important, and I think there would be no reason for the CIA to push the dossier. Its job is not to worry about domestic matters, so that fight may be the most consequential. Could the CIA really have been involved in this, and we don't know enough about it? I think that's one very important clue. That fight breaking out now suggests that the CIA may have had a role. Another thing that suggests it, if you hear what Attorney General Barr is doing with Durham, the prosecutor up in Connecticut, the CIA director is involved. The CIA would have no reason to be involved unless it had some people or exposure in the review that we're now undergoing. So there are hints now that the CIA may have played a larger role than the few factoids that we know. But I want to highlight one thing that was said yesterday. It really caught my attention. James Baker, former general counsel, the guy who thought Hillary should have been indicted originally, the guy who says he signed off and took the rare step of reviewing the Trump FISA first and tried to make sure it was okay for the court. He said something on CNN last night that I think is very important in the mindset of these people. He said he fully expects that the IG will uncover that mistakes were made. That's a big acknowledgement. The chief lawyer of the FBI at the time all these shenanigans went on, now saying he expects bad things to be exposed in the Inspector General review. That's how far this debate went. You go back 2 years ago, everyone was haughty. We did everything right. There's going to be collusion found. No collusion. And now we're expecting mistakes to be highlighted in the FISA process. That's a big turn of events from where we were 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. All right, so what do you expect coming out next?
You know, I think the most important thing is examining what Mr. Laycock did with the information. By all my reporting, Mr. Laycock did the right thing. This is the special agent, the section chief, who received the information from the State Department from Kavanaugh. We need to know who did he give it to and did that set off any alarms. My reporting indicates that as soon as he got it, he gave it to the Russia team, meaning the Pete Stroke team looking at Trump. We need to know, we need to get answers to What did people do? How did they handle it? Did it raise any alerts, or did they sweep it under the rug? That's a very important part. We have a whole new chain of documents and communications that just 2 weeks ago we didn't know about, and where, and also where the public might get some answers. What were the motives for meeting? Who set up the meeting? And what was the ultimate goal of Christopher Steele coming to the State Department and dumping that large amount of information to them? I think that's a whole other area of inquiry that is new for us.
All right, John Solomon, investigative reporter, executive director at The Hill. You have, I don't know if we'd be here without all your hard work over the last 2 years and your willingness to dig down every day and work hard. And really, it's old-fashioned reporting, you know, using sources and shoe leather and getting to the facts. And, you know, it's amazing the 99.9% in the media and in politics that have been so wrong. And the lies they told day after day, night after night. And yet we've been on the right course from the beginning. And this is, as you said the other night so eloquently, this is now the second act and the curtain has now gone up.
The report is now in the hands of the American people. Everyone can decide for themselves. There's an election in 18 months. That's a very democratic process. But we're out of it. And we have to stop using the criminal justice process as a political weapon. To the extent there was overreach, I don't want to judge people's motives and come to a conclusion on that, but to the extent there was overreach, what we have to be concerned about is a few people at the top getting it into their heads that they know better than the American people.
I'm not asking for private conversation.
I'm not going to abjure the use of the word spying. I think, my first job was in CIA, and I don't think the word spying has any pejorative connotation at all.
The question
is always whether or not it's authorized and adequately predicated spying. I think spying is a good English word that, in fact, doesn't have synonyms because it is the broadest word incorporating really all forms of covert intelligence collection. So I'm not going to back off the word spying, except I will say any pejorative, and I use it frequently,
When did you decide to use it? Was it off the cuff in the hearing that day? Or did you go into that hearing intending to use the word spying?
It was actually off the cuff, to tell you the truth. And when a senator, the
congressman person, probably?
Well, from Schatz, from Hawaii.
It was here?
Shaheen.
No.
Whoever it was, go ahead.
Yeah, when he challenged me and said, you want to change your language, I was actually thinking, like, what's the issue? I don't consider it a pejorative, but if...
And you're rather,
frankly, we went back and looked at press usage, and up until all the FOIA outrage a couple of weeks ago, it's commonly used in the press to refer to authorized activities, such as referring to the FISA court as the spy court.
But it's not commonly used by the department.
What?
It is not commonly used by the department. My time is
commonly used by me.
All right, glad you're with us. Hour two, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. Spying is not a pejorative. You know, this is a dangerous world governed by the use of military force. Spying is what other countries do to us every single solitary day. It is the misuse of the powerful tools of intelligence, weaponizing those tools against the American people when a line is crossed, because we have something called the Constitution. Carter Page is with us now. And let me read a quote that you had to say about the Mueller report. You've written a foreword to an ebook version of the Mueller report, calling it propaganda, comparing his time in front of the Mueller grand jury to being at Guantanamo Bay. Wow. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Sean, and I keep getting better each day, just given the fact, you know, as you were just alluding to, that Attorney General Barr is starting to take some steps to right this wrong that has been done. If I disagree with you on one thing, you know, it's really not about me. These people were coming after President Trump and really the whole Trump movement, you know, as you're correctly
alluding
to.
But with all due respect, Carter, I mean, they were spying on you. But yeah, you were a conduit into the Trump campaign, but as an individual, as an American citizen, and by the way, one that had a long track record, because your business causes you to travel and stay in places like Russia, Russia, Russia. But you had a long history of cooperating completely with our intelligence services and being debriefed, you know, on a regular basis. And with all due respect, you don't have to say yes or no, confirm or deny. Plausible deniability is fine with me, but I suspect you might have even worked for our friends in the intelligence community at some point.
I can now confirm, because it was came out in that fraudulent Mueller witch hunt report from a couple weeks ago, that I was in frequent contact with members of the U.S. intelligence community. Unfortunately, it was very much misrepresented in terms of the level of support I've given, and, you know, a lot of spin throughout that document.
You love your country, Carter?
Yeah.
What's you that? Love your country?
Absolutely, Sean.
And you have and no look, problem when your country's intelligence services want to know about trips abroad, people approaching you, whether you can give them any information that helps our country, you are more than willing to do it?
Not only that, Sean, I absolutely was, but I did it for free. Just like I was a unpaid junior volunteer supporting the Trump campaign for a few months. For many years and over a decade, really, I was, supporting the U.S. intelligence community. In stark contrast to the person who allegedly, by all accounts, was getting bribed by the DNC, you know, Mr. Christopher Steele, in terms of his dodgy dossier. So, I mean, if you look at the statute for bribery, and I've talked with a lot of lawyers about this, it really, you know, meets most, if not all, of the criteria. So I think we're just, as you've been saying over recent days and nights, we're just getting started here.
Well, I think the key moment, the big headline from yesterday, in spite of the breathless reporting, hysteria, attacks against Barr, and he's getting smeared for refusing, he's like a real attorney general, as the Wall Street Journal said today. The pylons are never pretty, but this week's political setup of the attorney general is disreputable, even by Beltway standards. And I think Barr's testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee, you know, preceded by the Washington Post and the New York Times and the leak by the Mueller people of the letter griping about Barr, it was all a setup, but more importantly, which means they're never going to get it. But the reality is, you know, the attorney general said a lot of things. He's done with Mueller. He's made his decision. That means there was no obstruction and there was no collusion, if you will, or conspiracy to work with the Russians in their interference campaign, which Devin Nunes warned everybody about in 2014, and it still happened on Obama Biden's watch. And more importantly, everything that, frankly, me and an ensemble cast have been working on for 2 years and have pretty much been alone and isolated with few exceptions. Talk radio, Rush, Mark, others, Tucker, Laura, Fox and Friends. You know, we've been the only voices saying, no, there's something else that happened here.
Yeah, absolutely, Sean. And, you know, it even goes, I mean, to your point about Attorney General Barr getting smeared. If you look at, and you said it perfectly in your conversation with Chairman Graham last night, Senate Judiciary, who led and organized yesterday's hearing, you know, it's exactly what happened with then Judge Kavanaugh in his confirmation hearing for the Supreme Court. They just come after people, you know, whether it was myself, but then Judge Kavanaugh and now Attorney General Barr, these crazy Democrats are just going completely out of control. And, you know, to your point in terms of your ensemble team, you guys have really been a lifesaver. You know, I have faced countless death threats, primarily from Oklahoma, but beyond. And you really...
Why Oklahoma? Why would it be Oklahoma if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I, you know, in those, all those 302s, you know, the FBI meetings in March of 2017, I had, you know, as you mentioned, I've been in long discussions and I've long been a supporter of the FBI, CIA and U.S. intelligence community. And unfortunately,
by the way,
you know,
so am
I told them, yeah, I absolutely know. I know. I see it. Again, actions speak louder than words. So you're, you know, I had told them that due to the false accusations in the Dodgy dossier that the DNC paid for, I got a long series of death threats, and I gave them the details from Oklahoma. And not only have they, you know, did they not move forward during the Comey and McCabe era, but that problem continued to fester and only got continued on throughout much of 2017. You know, so it really was a unfortunate political hoax that the some politicians in the FBI and DOJ were doing in Washington upon on behalf of the Democrat Party, which they're supporting. And unfortunately, it really hasn't come out yet in terms of a lot of those details. The you know, as I alluded to in my forward to the book, the Mueller report really is a hoax, and it really was in many ways much worse than Guantanamo Bay. But I'm cautiously optimistic that perhaps things are changing here.
What was your experience when you got called in to the Mueller special counsel? It was only one time. How long was it? And paint the picture so people can understand the process.
Well, this is the first time we can really talk about it, Sean. I've always tried to be respectful to what should be a legitimate process. But again, you know, it's exactly as you were saying. There was some really hard-nosed Democrat donors. The majority of, you know, assistant special counsel team members that were in there with me were Democrat donors. And so, but what was interesting about it, Sean, and it goes back to the importance of your great reporting. My one day there, it was really the full day. I was hoping it would end early, but it really went right to the close of business. That was in November 2017. It wasn't until the following month that you reported and your ensemble team reported that, you know, a lot of the definitive Democrat DNC donors were, and you had all the statistics and all the data about it. Mm-hmm. And if I, let me tell you something, if I had known about that previously, it might have been a different conversation, but it was really tough and totally uncalled for.
Did you, were you worried, concerned, because you were also spied on by yes. Stefan Halper, you, Papadopoulos, and Sam Clovis, correct?
Absolutely. I feel terrible about Sam Clovis. You know, there's a new article out this afternoon from the New York Times talking about how, you know, I
have it. The FBI sent investigator posing as assistant to meet with Trump aide in 2016. That one?
Yeah, you're one step ahead as usual, Sean. But, you know, they refer to the fact that I was, you know, positive about Professor Halper. And again, I believe in the, you know, as you always say, innocent until proven guilty. So we'll see what happens there. But, you know, I was very positive about that, about him when I briefed Sam Clovis about my interactions. And I feel absolutely terrible. You know, you talk about what happened to me. I feel really bad for everything that Sam Clovis got pulled through with this witch hunt. And he would have been a top
Did you worry that you were going to get one of those pre-dawn raids with guns drawn?
Absolutely never, Sean. You know, I
oh, that's funny, because I thought it was going to happen to me, but that's a different story.
Well,
they'll,
you know,
shut me up pretty quick.
Well, my only fear, again, just given how corrupt this system was, were these constant death threats that I kept getting. And
yeah, I know.
Again, you know, after all the work,
listen, I've lived through that. And anyone in the public eye, I mean, whenever I see anybody, any colleague, I say something to them, because unfortunately, you know, you don't like to talk about it, but it's part of the fare of being a public figure. It sucks. And I know you're going to sue. I know you said you don't want the money, but I think you need to rethink it. And I think you need to talk to Lynn Wood, the attorney for Nicholas Sandman, that Covington kid. Will you consider doing that?
Sean, you know, as this has just gotten more outrageous, I have had some of the top attorneys and some of the top law firms in the United States reach out and offer some assistance. I have loved learning the law and
Carter?
However,
Carter?
Yeah, no, I know.
You know what? Are you going to operate on yourself?
No.
Okay. Don't do this yourself anymore. Get the pros in.
Absolutely.
All right. And if you need help getting a lawyer, I know a lot of good ones.
I know you do, Sean. You have some of the best on your show all the time.
So. I have some of the best on my payroll all the time because a million people trying to kill me every day. So anyway, listen, we wish you the best. Carter Page, thoughts and prayers are with you. Sorry that this country did this to you. We are a better country than that. And this needs to be totally gotten to the bottom of. And I am looking at it as my job. As long as it takes, we'll hold them accountable. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Sean, for everything.
Well, we're coming to your city. Gonna play our guitars and sing you a country song. We'll all be flying higher than a jet airliner. And if you want a little bang in your yin-yang, come along.
What do you think has changed in America that, you know, it hasn't been that long since World War II? What do you think in 70 years or so has changed that the new crop, the young Americans now, are many of them, not all of them, but many of them are so different than the attitude that you guys had back then?
Well, when it come to you taking care of yourself, that's what you did. No matter if you needed to earn a dollar, you'd go out and figure out how to earn a dollar. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't sit around and wait for somebody to hand you something.
Mm-hmm. What do all your employees think about you as a boss?
What employees?
You don't have any employees?
No.
You do this all by yourself down here?
I hired two different times.
Yeah.
They were experts, but they couldn't hem a pair of pants like I wanted them to.
So you had to go redo it?
I'd redo it or make them redo it. And I decided that was a waste of time.
Mm-hmm. You might as well do it yourself.
Might as well do it myself.
Sounds familiar.
Uh-huh.
I like that. So what goes through your mind when you turn on the news and you see people busting out windows or acting in some of these protests? I mean, it's our right to protest, but you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And they say they want to see socialism come into the United States. Or you talk about when you were growing up, nobody gave you anything. If you needed a dollar, you figure out a way to go earn that dollar. What do you think? Because I know you keep up with the news and all that. I just can't imagine what goes through your mind, but tell me what goes through your mind when you see that. What would you like to tell those people if you could walk a couple of them into your shop at 86 that you run by yourself and make a good living at? What would you tell those young people?
Well, I would tell them that if they wanted anything, they needed to get out and figure out how to do it for themselves.
I'll be flying higher than a jet airliner. And if you want a little bang in your yin-yang, come along.
All right, what is a little bang in your yin-yang come along? This could only be one thing. John Rich is in the house from Big and Rich, and I'm going to explain that interview in just a second. I'm laughing my ass off. That is just phenomenal. How are you, my friend? Good to see you.
Man, good to see you, my buddy. Good to see you.
Last time you're here, so you talk about Redneck Riviera whiskey.
Yep.
I got cases right behind me.
I know, man.
And then we do our Fox Nation hit some days,
And
it's right behind me. It's like free advertising for you.
I owe you more whiskey now. No, see, it's all in trade.
Though some of those bottles are going missing a little bit. But
yeah. Well, it's done great since that interview. We're around 45 states.
It's awesome.
It's just it's all across the country, and you know we give 10% back to the Folds of Honor.
By the way, I love the Folds of Honor. I know a lot of my friends at Fox work with them.
Oh, yeah.
And I work with Building Homes for Heroes. We all do our little thing to help these guys.
Well, and you helped get me over the line. Remember you asked me how many scholarships? Well, after you purchased what you purchased and everybody else across America did, Redneck Riviera Whiskey paid for 43 college grants for the Folds of Honor in 2018.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
It's such a good cause. Now, this is what I love about you. You're like a man of action. Like you're just constantly thinking and moving. And I hear about what goes on. You have at your house a bar and a jamming room.
Right.
I've never been invited myself, but I've seen it. You did a TV special about it.
Yeah.
All right. You just get up there with anybody and jam.
Yeah. It's got a full stage and it's got a
full bar.
It's got a pool in the backyard shaped like a Gibson guitar that's about 70 feet long. You know, I grew up in a double wide trailer in Amarillo, Texas. Nothing right. fancy. But I was raised to believe in America. You're allowed to work as hard as you want to, dream as big as you want to. Doesn't mean you're going to achieve everything you want to do, but you got the right to go for it. And I've gone after it my whole life. And
Not
just for monetary stuff and like that, like just the integrity and the great feeling you get when you achieve something or go after something.
You're one of the best, most well-known writers of music. I know most people know you from Big and Rich, but you write for so many other artists. I mean, you're cranking out creativity mm-hmm. on a regular basis. You've even written for this show, Firing Torpedoes of Truth
at a Wall of Lies.
That came right out of your brain.
We came up with that at the very first tea party.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, yeah, it was like 2008, right?
No, 2010.
2010.
In Atlanta. We had, 25,000 people showing up in the streets. It was crazy.
Yes.
And you were nice enough, as you have on so many occasions, come out for us. And you were there, and you were playing, and you were jamming, and the crowd was going nuts. I expected, 300 people.
It was an absolute huge crowd.
And it was like up the street, down the street, around the corner, and like you couldn't even see the end of the crowd.
Yeah, the patriotism was thick.
So you own a bar in the Vegas Strip, and I think you now own one in Music City, in Nashville.
Yes.
Called the Redneck Riviera.
That's right. Same name as the whiskey. So if you go to Nashville, it's right on Broadway, which is where all the bars are lined up, the right. Ryman Auditorium's there. So I'm at 3rd and Broad, and we have that Heroes Bar inside where if you're active duty or a vet, you walk in and they roll out the carpet. We hire veterans and active duty.
I want to tell everybody what you do. So you go into the Redneck Riviera either in Vegas or in Nashville.
Right.
And you go to the back, you have a special bar.
Called the Heroes Bar.
Heroes Bar. Now, if you're active military, you served your country.
Right.
Explain.
Or a veteran.
Or a vet.
You come in, the Heroes Bar, those military coins that a lot of the guys and gals, if they like you, they'll shake your hand and give you their coin about their service.
I got a whole collection. I saved them all.
Me too. So we put a bunch of those coins, a bunch of my coins, down into that bar, like mounted them down in there. And so if you're active duty or a vet and you sit down in there, they start comping your drinks. The band will sing the Star Spangled Banner. Yeah. The best-selling T-shirt at the Redneck Riviera says, if you kneel for the national anthem, you're in the wrong damn bar.
We
can't print them as fast as people buy them. And, I'm proud of it. I've never shied away from being a patriot and loving our country and respecting what it stands for.
I love so much about what you do. Now, when I went to your Vegas bar, you and Kenny, Big Kenny, were playing together. I mean, it was so fun.
Yeah.
The only thing that was weird about that night is that Linda was there, and she was dancing by herself. I don't get people on a dance floor dancing
like
by herself. I don't care whether you like it. It's a fact.
I enjoyed it, Linda.
First
I thought it was great.
Thank you, John. Yes.
Everybody was looking, and there you are rocking out to Big and Rich.
First of all,
what are you doing?
This is fake news, and let me tell you why.
So it's fake. If it's not
fake news, and let me tell you why.
This is such BS.
There is never, first of all, and John's going to agree, there is never one person on the dance floor at a Big and Rich concert. Okay, I was not alone. We were all breaking it down.
No, you were dancing solo.
I just wasn't dancing with any
crowd.
Of our people because our people stink and they didn't have the cojones to get up
stink.
On the dance floor.
I was drinking and enjoying the music.
Sean, you are uncovering something about yourself right now.
What's that? I'm uptight?
The one time you're not the center of attention, it drives you totally crazy. That's what it really
ding,
is, Linda.
Ding, ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding.
Well, that's not true because I was taking selfies in your bar all the night.
Oh, dude, that night was ridiculous.
All right. But so I went to the Heroes Bar.
Uh-huh.
I did a shot with a lot of vets.
Yeah.
And then they want me to do another one.
Right.
Here's a little secret. I try to avoid, when John Rich is in town, going out with John Rich. There's no way I am getting home before the sun comes up.
But you need a night like that every now and then. You're so high pressurized, bro.
Bro, listen. You make me do shots of Crown Royal back
not
in the
anymore.
Day. No, now it's Riviera.
Redneck Riviera.
Right. All right, so we play this interview and this is really cool, actually. I want everybody to know about this. It's called Granny Rich Reserve. This is a new blend.
Yes, so this is Granny Rich Reserve, which is exactly like Redneck Riviera whiskey, but it's aged 4 more years. and it's 86 proof because she was 86 as we developed it. The original's 80 proof. So it's a little stronger and a little more aged, just like Granny Rich, who is the most experienced whiskey drinker I know. She's been sipping whiskey since World War II and still runs her own business and, you know, 40 hours a week. She's now 87 years old. So Granny Rich Reserve just came out across America. And we're proud to have it out there. Her face is on it.
Yeah, her face is on the back. She's a very beautiful woman. First of all, how cool that she... I like those moonshine shows.
Right, right.
You know? And I'm like, all these guys...
Yeah, she's like our Popcorn Sutton, you know?
Exactly.
RedneckRiviera.com, Sean, as always. You go on there. We actually just got it loaded up. You click on the ship it to my house.
Right.
And they'll send it right to your house. Granny Rich Reserve it's only in 10 states so far. So if you're not in one of those 10 states, that's how you get it.
Well, it's sort of like if you like Johnny Walker, they got Johnny Walker red, black, but then they got Johnny Walker blue.
Right.
This is sort of like your
this
blue.
This is the reserve, yeah.
Right.
So this is the good stuff. And, you know, Granny stands for so much to me. And now you're finding out she's becoming kind of iconic, honestly.
She made all your clothes, your on stage clothes for
years.
She's
a seamstress. So she's an alterations expert and has been since the 40s and 50s and still is and runs her own business. She makes my stage clothes. She fixes everybody's clothes that ever comes in her
shop.
You know,
I wear your boots that you gave me all the time.
Yeah.
I love those boots.
Yeah, for sure.
And you got other stuff that, you know, that you have for sale. I better get a t-shirt, though. I want this. I do appreciate, by
the way.
I got
you your cap.
Redneck Riviera. It's a green.
It's green.
And it says Irish Redneck.
Yeah. It's got the clover on it there,
it's
Shawnee.
It's got the clover for Shawnee, old boy. But I love t-shirts because I work out every day like a maniac. So tell me what here, one question. So your dad is a preacher. And he's fire brimstone, right?
Correct. Preaches at the prisons.
Does he get mad that you drink whiskey?
No, because it's not a problem to drink whiskey. It's a problem to drink too much whiskey. It's like it's not a problem to eat food. It's a problem to eat too much food.
Well, but you got to define too much, because when I hang out with you, you're fine. By the end of the night, I'm like ready to be carried home.
You know,
and I have a pretty high tolerance.
Listen, I asked him about it, you know, and he said, "Well, are you tithing on it?" Which is Malachi 3:10. I said, "Yes, sir, 10%." He goes, "Who are you tithing to?" I said, "The Folds of Honor. It puts kids through college who lost a parent in combat." I said, "So are we good?" He goes, "Well, Jesus didn't turn the water into Dr. Pepper." That was his answer, which
true,
is a
right?
huge thing for my dad to
then
say.
Why
that.
Doesn't the church, some denominations, why don't they think it's okay to drink?
Well, probably because in reality, if you don't drink at all ever, there's never a chance of you doing
getting
anything wrong. But it's just like anything else. Like, you can overeat, you can overwork, you can do anything too much, and it's not good for you.
Problem is, you go out with John Rich, and you can't say no.
Because you're having a good time.
Because you're having a great time. Remember the night we were out with that one famous actor? I don't want to mention him on the
air. Oh, yeah, I remember.
He's nuts.
A little bit.
He's a little bit nuts.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Now, tell me what you're doing musically right now. What are you up to?
Well, you know, the Big and Rich Tour is all over the United States. I think we're going to hit about 70 cities this year. The Granny Rich story right now is really breaking. I think you played some of me interviewing her earlier.
I did.
You know, when she's talking about seeing politicians interjecting socialism, like straight up socialism, into our conversations in this country. She sees that, and it really, really upsets her, because she'll tell you about during World War II how they were dragging scrap metal to the school buildings so they could, everybody from the little kids to the old people, were pulling together as one unit, and they didn't agree on all their politics back then
and
either.
She does this all on her own. I mean, I'm looking at this whiskey. We'll put it up on Hannity.com, Linda, if you can. It's the Granny Rich Reserve.
Yeah,
it's got to be limited in terms of production, because only she's making this.
Well, I mean, we make it. You know, my same company that makes Redneck Riviera whiskey makes it, but it is a very specific thing. Yes,
specific so Granny.
It's specific, to her. And so, like I said,
Granny Rich.
Yeah.
By the way, is she related to you? Is she your granny?
She's my granny. You kidding me? That's why I'm the way I am. She's
Dude,
been
she
drinking
makes
whiskey.
His since costume, son.
She makes my stuff.
I just
buddy.
Thought you called her Granny Rich. I didn't know it was your real granny.
Are you serious? That's my dad. The dad you were just talking about, who's a preacher, that's his mother. Okay.
And he doesn't drink
No, so it skipped the generation. So me and Granny are drinking buddies. So
man, that's
RedneckRiviera.com. If you're out there and at your computer, go to that website. You'll see on the very front page, there's a store locator. You put your zip code in, you'll find the stores, or you can have it shipped to your house. 10% to the Folds of Honor.
Yeah, well, just I want to put a lot of emphasis on that, because it's really important. RedneckRiviera.com. Redneck Riviera Whiskey, this is the regular whiskey, is in 45 states.
45 states.
But Redneck Riviera Granny Rich, that means your granny,
Reserve.
Real granny made it. By the way, I can see where you got your good looks from, because they have a picture of Granny on there, and you can get that. But doesn't matter which bottle you buy, 10% goes to the Folds of Honor, which provided over 40 scholarships to fallen heroes, children, and spouses. And by the way, you're singing the national anthem, I read, at the Dover Motor Speedway on May 5th, and you're going to be attending the race weekend as part of... I guess big production, yeah, the Redneck Riviera Whiskey production.
Yeah, so Dover Downs, you know, famous racetrack. It's their 50th anniversary. Yeah. They wanted Redneck Riviera Whiskey throughout Folds of Honor activations. I get to sing the national anthem. And
who's your favorite driver?
Oh man, you know, I was a Dale Jr. guy. You know,
yep.
I actually got to be in his dad's pit crew one time way back in the day in Bristol, Tennessee. But you know, I get to take my kids. This will be their first NASCAR race. So Cash and Colt are now 9 and 7. So they're going to go get to watch.
When
the
I
race.
First covered the Daytona, I was blown away.
Yeah,
I was blown because I grew up hockey, and baseball and basketball, and it blew me away.
Yeah,
and then I met those guys. They're all cool. All right, we love it. Just go to the Redneck Riviera, oneword.com. Our buddy John Rich, we love you.
Thank you, Sean.
My best to your dad, your
God
grandma,
bless you.
Granny Rich,